the 13th of October, Gewalt, okay, 1999. We are currently learning Maseches Rosh Hashanah. We are on Daf Ches, Amud Beis, in other words, would be the 8th folio, second side. And for those of you who have, you'll see there may be a little 15, but anyway, it's the first page that I distributed to you. And the problem that we have over here is based upon a discrepancy that we find between what the Mishnah has to say and what the Torah itself mentions. We're talking about Yovel. Yovel, as you know, is the Jubilee year, and the Torah tells us various things concerning Jubilee. First of all, it says, "Va'avartem shofar tura b'chodesh hashviyi be'echad be'asol l'chodesh," that you are to blow the shofar in the seventh month, meaning, of course, the month of Tishrei, on the tenth day of the month, b'yom ha'kipurim. In other words, it is on the Day of Atonement, right? Ta'aviru shofar b'chol artzachem, you are to sound the shofar throughout your land, okay? And then, you know, it mentions certain the things that are going to happen during the year of Jubilee, namely, that this is the year in which, for example, Jewish slaves are to be freed. Property that was in a field or in an unwalled city was to be returned to the original owner at this particular time. And of course, it's a year again in which we're not allowed to do any sowing or planting and so on and so forth. Okay? So this is the Jubilee year. Now, as I said, there is a discrepancy between the Mishnah and between the Torah itself, because the Torah itself says that when we blow the shofar, we blow it on Yom Kippur, in this particular case, okay? But what did the Mishnah at the very beginning of the chapter have to speak about? So it mentions, if you remember, it starts with enumeration of various Rosh Hashanahs. So we've already discussed in the past few weeks two of them that were mentioned, namely the Rosh Hashanah, which occurs in the month of Nisan, which we say is the Rosh Hashanah as far as two things, right? We mentioned kings, and then we mentioned also festivals, regalim. Okay, so from the point of view of regalim, I'll take that first. We learned at that particular time that this is particularly important from the point of view if you make a vow, or you make a pledge. How much time do you have in order to fulfill the vow or the pledge, okay? And while we had at least three different opinions that are mentioned, but the prevailing opinion, to summarize right now, is that it has to be Shalosh Regalim, and that they have to be Kesidron. In other words, they have to be three festivals you have in order, that amount of time, in order to fulfill the pledge that you made. And they also have to be, however, in the proper order, meaning that it has to be in the order in which the Torah has it, namely, what is the first holiday mentioned? And naturally, it's Pesach, right? Then comes Shavuos, and then comes Sukkot. So that we learned that if, for example, a person made a pledge, a vow, let's say prior to Sukkot, then in that case, he doesn't have to bring it after the third festival, but he has one more additional one, because he has Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuos, and then finally Sukkot, in order to fulfill. If he hasn't fulfilled his pledge by then he is in violation, as we learn, of the law which states in the Torah, Lo sa'achir l'shalmo, you shall not delay in fulfilling your pledge, okay? If it were, for example, before Shavuos, then we learned he has even more leeway, because he has Shavuos, and he has Sukkot, and then he has the following, Pesach, Shavuos, and so forth. This we learned is the prevailing view among the sages, although, according to Rabbi Meir, he doesn't allow that. He says the very first time, that's when you have to do it, the first regal that comes along. Another one says that you have to regal. Okay, so they are, they all have good reasons, but nevertheless, we have to go in this case by the prevailing opinion, which is the one that I mentioned. Okay. So that's what we learned as far as Rosh Hashanah, that as the Rosh Chodesh Nisan is concerned, as far as as far as pledges are concerned, the regalim. And what about Melochim? So we learned two things about that. First of all, we learned that a king's reign is dated from the first of Nisan, so that if, for example, a king began reigning prior to that, then what did we say? Right, that when Rosh Chodesh Nisan came, it counted as if that was already a complete year. So that's one of the things that we learned. And then we learned last week another halacha, and that is, what is the practical purpose? So the answer is that we learned in another mishnah, another tractate, about if a person borrows money, okay? And naturally, whenever you borrow money, you have a debtor and you have a creditor, right? So they write a note. The note means that the person who has borrowed the money promises to repay within the specified amount of time, and if not, then the creditor has the opportunity to collect from property owned by the debtor in order to repay the amount that he owes. Okay. So we learned there that a shtar chov or shtar chov hamukdamim, if it is predated, in other words, they put down on the date prior to the actual time that the loan took place, then it's psulim. Okay, such a note is absolutely invalid, no question at all. On the other hand, shtar chov hamukdamim hamukharin, notes that are dated after the event, they are perfectly okay. Why? Because we're saying that the creditor, in the case of a predated note, right, if he would seize property that was acquired by the debtor prior to the actual date that the loan took place, he would be seizing property which he has no right to. Okay? Whereas, if he decides, let's say, to forego a few days, let's say, from the time that the actual loan took place and the time that they put down on the note, by postdating it, then in that case, it's his privilege. I mean, if he feels that he doesn't want to collect that, then it's not the hate, you know. It's being a nice guy, that's all. So, what does it have to do with kings? The answer is, of course, that in dating, they dated by the reign of kings. So that, if it were, let's say, the 23rd of Maheshwar, okay, in the third year of the reign of King Chaim, or something like that, then in that particular case, it would mean that the king may have been only on the throne for how many years? Only two, right. But nevertheless, because of this rule that we learned, so the note already could be dated the third and would not be an invalid note. Whereas if they put it, let's say, the fifth year or something like that, then obviously such a note would be no good. It's invalid because nobody's going to make a mistake to that effect. You can make a mistake between whether we should say the second year or the third year, right? But we should not, or maybe even the fourth year, to give it a little bit more leeway. But to put down the fifth year, that already cannot be considered as being a valid note. So that note is no good. Okay, so they date it. But now the problem that we have, as we're going to see, is that as far as dating is concerned, they didn't necessarily date by whom? By Jewish kings. Because there was a time when there were no Jewish kings. So who did they date by? Then in that particular case, they dated by non-Jewish kings. Okay? Now, if they're dating by non-Jewish kings, then would the same rule apply that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of a new year for a non-Jewish king or not? And we saw there's a difference of opinion, but in the final analysis, the opinion of Rav Chisda is the one that is accepted, namely, that for Malchei Yisroel, in other words, Jewish kings, then the first of Nisan marks a Rosh Hashanah for them, okay? Whereas, in the case of non-Jewish kings, Then in that particular case, the first of Tishrei marks the new year for them. Okay, so guns good. Now, getting back to what we're doing over here as far as the Jubilee year is concerned. Okay, the Mishnah stated that Rosh Hashanah, by the way, yes, the other item that we had before, another Rosh Hashanah that we discussed prior to that, in the last couple of weeks or so, was as far as the tithing of cattle is concerned. Torah says that every year, newborn animals, if they're kosher animals, naturally, right, they are tithed, and then the owner takes the tenth animal, right, and he brings it to Yerushalayim, and he makes a family feast with it, okay? So that's what we call Matzah Behema, the tithe of the cattle. But again, there's a problem. How do you date, you know, when the animal was born? Especially if you have a large herd or something like that, then in that particular case, it might not be so easy to date and to say that the animal was born, let's say, on the 25th of Kislev or something like that. So instead, according to one opinion, the tithing of the cattle, that is a new year for the tithing of the cattle, begins on Rosh Chodesh Elul. That's one opinion. On the other hand, we learned that there's another opinion that says that the Rosh Hashanah for the tithing of the cattle, this begins not on Rosh Chodesh Elul, but it begins on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Okay? So now we're in the middle of the Mishnah, which deals with the problems of what Rosh Hashanahs are observed, shall we say, on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Okay? Okay. We still have, incidentally, one more Rosh Hashanah to depend upon, but we also saw that it could be others. Just to mention, first of all, in the Mishnah itself, there is one more Rosh Hashanah that hasn't been mentioned as yet, and that is, right, either it's the Rosh Chodesh Shvat according to Beis Shammai, or it is Tu B'Shvat according to Beis Hillel. Of course, we normally follow Beis Hillel, the ruling, so that this is why we celebrate Tu B'Shvat, that this is the time when it's a Rosh Hashanah, so to speak, you know, for
trees
and things like that, right. But actually, we learned also a Beraisa, which dealt with a few other Rosh Hashanahs, but we'll disregard them right now. I just want to mention one of them was the fact that we learned that the 16th of Nisan, in other words, the second day of the Pesach period, is a Rosh Hashanah as far as the Omer is concerned, because that's when they would bring the Omer of Bali back in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. And the other one that we learned was the 6th of Sivan, in other words, the first day of Shavuos. Of course, in Eretz Israel, it is Shavuos, period, okay? That was the time for the beginning of the Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves of bread, together with a sacrifice at that time, and that marked the fact that from this point on, they could use the new grain for services in the temple. The new grain for ordinary eating was when the Omer was brought, but this marked now the new grain as far as the making of menachos. Menachos are, you know, the kind of meal offerings, which would mean, you know, it could be in the form of matzah, it could be in the form of cake, cookies, and so on, because the Torah has different things that are mentioned over there, depending upon what sacrifice, for example, is involved. Okay? Now, but those we didn't count because we were talking about those that the Mishnah itself mentions at the beginning of the chapter. Okay? So, excuse me. We also learned, this is at the top of the page. All right. Let's take a look at the very top line over there. I'll read you what went before. I have it over there, but it's Rosh Hashanah as far as what? Also as far as judgment of human beings is concerned. Rosh Hashanah Ledin. Okay? And how do we know that? Because that, as we learned, was based on an interpretation where it says, Bereishis Hashanah V'yad Achri Shanah, that the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a look at human beings, he judges them from the beginning of the year till the very end of the year. Okay? And this is a reference to Rosh Hashanah, where, as I explained in another passage, not over here, but later on, they explained that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam makes a decision how much parnasa you're going to have during the course of the year. And, he also makes allowances for the fact if you have educational expenses or you give stock and so on, so the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is not going to deprive you of the money that you need for that, because after all, these things are things, you know, that that they serve as a blessing to all mankind. So as a result, when is this time? So the answer is Rosh Hashanah. Now what is it based on? It's based upon the fact that it's written Tikku B'Chodesh Shofar. It's a verse in the Psalms, but we recited it on Rosh Hashanah, you know. Tikku B'Chodesh Shofar, blow the shofar, right? On the new moon, right? Ba'Keseh Liyom Chageinu. And this word Keseh is a difficult word for us to understand, because in the Bible itself, Keseh seems to mean like a festival, but then it says B'Yom Chageinu, right? On the day of our celebration, right? Our Chag, our holiday. So that therefore, the Gemara asks, and this is what we have on the top line over there on the page that I gave you, it says, which is the month, is the Chodesh, Chodesh Mitzkasebo. What is the Chag? In other words, what holiday do you have when the month, when the new moon is covered? Remember that Chodesh also means not only month, but it refers to the new moon. In other words, the word that is missing is the word Rosh Chodesh, okay? But Chodesh by itself can also mean the new moon in various contexts in the Bible. So he says, what is the holiday when the new moon is covered? So the answer is Heve Yomer. You have to say, it's the top line on the page over there, is Rosh Hashanah. We're referring to Rosh Hashanah, right? Because, again, all the holidays, the other ones, Pesach, Shavuos, right? Sukkos. Pesach occurs when? The 14th, the 15th of the month of Nisan, right? Okay. Shavuos is based, of course, upon Pesach, because you have to count 7 full weeks, and then the following day, the 50th day, is Shavuos, okay. But anyway, it's never when? It's never on Rosh Chodesh. It's already the 6th day of Sivan, or the 7th, or the 5th. These are three possibilities, but officially it's the 6th, okay? And then Sukkot, of course, is always on the 15th of the month, and even Yom Kippur is what? It's the 10th of the month. So there's only one major festival which occurs on Rosh Chodesh, and that, of course, is Rosh Hashanah, because then the moon is covered over. That's how they interpret the word Ba'Keseh, from the root Chav Samach Hei, which means also to cover in Hebrew. And that's why they say, this is our Chodesh Miskasipo, okay? And Siv Ki Chok Yisrael Hu Mishpat Yaakov, right? And then the Bible continues in the book of Tehillim by saying in the next pasuk, because this is a Chok Yisrael, it's a law for the people of Israel, Mishpat Yaakov, and it's a time of judgment for the God of Jacob. So that therefore we learn that what? On this particular day, judgment is passed upon all humankind. Of course, this is why, to this very day, we celebrate Rosh Hashanah as being the Yom Din. It's the day of judgment upon all of us, okay? And then it continued over there on the top of the page to mention the fact that not only are the people of Israel judged on Rosh Hashanah, but actually, all the nations of the world are judged at that particular time. They come in and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam decides what's going to be the fate of these nations. Right. Okay, yes.
Hashanah Rabbah is
yes.
also associated with judgment of the nations, right?
With what?
That Hashem judges the rest of the nations.
Yeah, well, not so much Hashanah Rabbah as it is actually the festival of Sukkot. Okay, you have to look upon these holidays in Tishrei as being, even though there are three distinct holidays, or four if you want to say that Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah is separate, according to one opinion, right? But you have to look at it really as thematically there is a unity that you can sense in them. Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment, but judgment is always suspended. What?
Until Yom Kippur,
right? That's what we say. But Rosh Hashanah Yechaseivun, right?
Yeah.
On Rosh Hashanah, the decree is going to be written down. V'yom Yom Kippur Yechaseivun, right? And on Yom Kippur, the sealing takes place. Yet we also have another teaching that teaches us that even though the decree may be sealed, but it's never too late. Rebbeinu Shlomo can always change it for good if we do that which is right. Okay? So if we do that which is right, we have an extended period that goes right through Sukkot. Okay? And the fact that we come and we show the Rebbeinu Shlomo that we are fulfilling mitzvahs by building a sukkah, by taking the lulav and the yesrig and making the brachas over them and so on, this shows the Rebbeinu Shlomo that we want to continue a life in which we perform mitzvahs. Okay? So that therefore Hoshana Rabbah, which is the seventh day of the festival, this is the day upon which we say that you get your kvittel. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shlomo gives you the note, so to speak, you know, that you have a good year. At least we all pray that way, okay? But what you said about the nations of the world, okay, this is a somewhat different theme. This is based upon the fact, first of all, as I said, as the Gemara itself says, that all the nations of the world are judged on Rosh Hashanah, right? And of course, you know, in our Musaf service, we have three additional brachas that are included as part of the Musaf service. One we call Malchios, in which we stress that God is the king, he's the ruler of the entire universe, right? Zichronos, in which we stress the theme that God remembers, he remembers us, every human being, right? And then of course Shofros, you know, the theme of why do we blow shofar, and all the various references that are associated with the blowing of the shofar. Alright, now in Zichronos, if you remember your Musaf service from Yom Tov, remember that there's a passage as part of it which says the Al Hamidinos Bo Yeyomer, right, and even concerning other nations we find that a decree is made Ezel HaCherev, the Ezel HaSova, Ezel HaRov, etc., etc. In other words, which nation will be condemned to war, which nation will have peace, which nation will have plenty, which nation will have famine, and so on and so forth. Okay. And of course, the Briyos Bayapokedu, and all human creatures are judged, L'chayim V'lamavis, whether it will be for life or whether it will be for death. So that all this is Rosh Hashanah. Okay. The nations of the world are also remembered in Sukkot. How so? If we take a look in the Torah, we see that during the course of Sukkot, there are many, many offerings that were offered up, korbanos, in the Beis Hamikdash. Okay? And one of them happens to be with the korban of the Purim, in other words, oxen that was that was sacrificed. Okay, so that you have on the first day of Sukkot, in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, they sacrificed 14. The next day was 13. Then 12. Then 11. Okay. And then 10. And then 9 and 8. But at any rate, the total eventually comes to how much? Comes to 70. Okay. So our sages say, you know, that these 70 sacrifices, they were on behalf of the Shivim Umos, the 70 nations of the world. In those days, there was a tradition that there were 70 known nations. Okay. So it's on their behalf that Israel sacrificed. It's interesting. We Jews sacrificed on behalf of all the nations of the world, and of course we know it. I mean, Nobel Prize winners and I don't have to go into a whole list of how many sacrifices and how much we've given to all the nations in the world in every field of human thought and endeavor and so on and so forth. But along comes Shmini Atzeres, and there it says, Vayomar Shmini Atzeres Tiyemachem, right? On this eighth day, this is your own festival, and we only have one par at that particular time, because we, after sacrificing on behalf of everybody, we must never forget that we have to also sacrifice for ourselves. We have to look out for our own interests. And I wish that some of our fellow Jews, who are always concerned about the other people, I mean, I'm always talking about Tikkun Olam, making a better world, so, but how about our own personal problems? We also have problems that we have to solve for ourselves as Jews.
Sacrifice on the first day of Sukkot for us.
Well,
I have one question.
Yeah.
You said that Rosh Hashanah always is on the on Rosh Chodesh.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
And Yom Kippur has to be 8 days.
No, it's the 10th day.
It's the 10th day.
Well, I mean, Rosh Hashanah is the first day, and
right.
Of course we observe 2 days, so
right.
It's the first and second
ten
of
days. Right,
okay.
Now I figure 8 days after, it's the same
thing. Okay, all right.
But we have a problem with Yom Kippur. There's a way that Yom Kippur cannot be on a Friday.
All right,
Sunday.
Correct, right. Our sages
so
already
determined
that, yes.
You know, how do we work it out with the Rosh Chodesh?
That has nothing to do with Rosh Chodesh. What they have to do is that they have to fix up the calendar in such a way, yes, when they actually proclaimed Rosh Chodesh, so they have
they
to take into account
that
they should not proclaim Rosh Chodesh on this day, but put it off for another, for the next day or something like that, so that you wouldn't have this conflict. You're correct.
Yeah, because that would create, that could create a conflict.
Right,
so
right. They say that Rosh Hashanah can never begin on a Sunday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. And it has to do two of those dates, because either you're going to wind up that Yom Kippur would be on a Friday or on a Sunday, right? And the other one is in reference to Hoshana Rabbah. That Hoshana Rabbah, we don't want it to occur on a Shabbos. We want Hoshana Rabbah to be on a weekday. Because then we can march around and clap the Hoshanas and so on and so forth, you know.
So
you couldn't do on Shabbos. So that, therefore, that's the third factor as far as the calendar
so
is concerned.
So they can manipulate the declaration of the Rosh Chodesh.
If necessarily they could, right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
The way it's done, the year of time is predicted, each year with extra days in certain months, it's not just
yes,
day.
Yes.
That's the only way you can't just say that it's going to be Rosh Chodesh.
Yeah, absolutely right, George. Yeah.
Well,
right. Of course, you know, our calendar is fixed. It's fixed already back in around the fourth century, approximately. Okay, and it was determined, you know, how many months there would be in the various, in the 19-year cycle. In other words, when do we have to put in an extra month of Adar, when don't we? You know, and so on. But George is also right. We have 2 months in the Jewish year where it's variable. One is the month of Cheshvan, and the other one is the month of Kislev. Either these months could have either 30 days or 29 days. It could be that they both have 30 days, it could be they both have 29 days, and it could be that one has 29, the other one has 30. Okay? These are all possibilities. Okay? But this was already figured out in advance, right, in order to make sure that you wouldn't have these calendar conflicts in the future. Well, that's exactly how it is. Okay. Yeah, today, I guess. Those days they had human brains that worked instead of computers.
And it's in perpetuity, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, it just keeps going.
Yeah, I mean, you could right now get books which give you calendars for the year 2099 or something like
that.
That.
I mean,
right,
yeah.
No question about that. Right. Remember, I used to get a big kick out of, you know, the back of the mouse that we used for the Birnbaum mouse, where he went for, all the way to 19 something or other and so on. But now it's outdated.
Now it's here. Yeah.
It's outdated. Yeah. We've already gone beyond that.
Is
anyway, let's get back to our text, though. All right. So, we are now, I'm starting in the middle over there at Cecil Yovlos. I said at the beginning of tonight's session that with Yovel, the Jubilee year, there was a problem in that, what? Torah says that the Jubilee year is proclaimed when? On Yom Kippur, right? And that's when they blow the shofar, and that's when... On the other hand, the Mishnah says that the first day of Tishrei, right, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, is the Rosh Hashanah also as far as the Jubilee year is concerned. So let's see how the Gemara resolves that problem, okay? Does everybody see where it says Ul Yoflos? It's the fourth line above where the it lengthens out, okay? So the Gemara says, Yovlos b'echa b'tishrehu? Can you maintain that the Jubilee year, that the Rosh Hashanah for that, so to speak, is the first day of Tishrei? Yovlos b'yud b'tishrehu. In other words, the Yovel, the Jubilee year, should begin when? On the 10th day of Tishrei. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says in the Torah, b'yom ha-kippurim, right? On Yom Kippur, Ta'aviru shofar. That's the day that you blow the shofar for the Jubilee year. So, first of all, they say homani. Whose opinion is it, what, that that Rosh Hashanah, in other words, that Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah as far as Jubilee years are concerned? So they say, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, ben Oshel, Rabbi Yochanan, ben Brokahu. That's his opinion. The Tanya, as we have learned, and this is how he interprets that, you know, that passage in the Torah. It's written, "V'kidashtem ishnasa chamishim shana." You shall proclaim as holy the 50th year. Ma Talmud Loma. What is the meaning of this pasuk? He says, "Lefi she'ne'amar b'yom ha'kippurim." Right. Inasmuch as it says in the Torah itself, it mentions Yom Kippur as a day. Yochol lo tahem mitzchadesh esel miyom ha'kippur ve'ilach. So shall I say then that the year is not sanctified except from Yom Kippur on? Whereas what did the Mishnah say? It says from Rosh Hashanah on, right? So Mekanu Amar Rabbi Yishmael, therefore based on this, Rabbi Yishmael ben Oshel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, said, what happens? May Rosh Hashanah ad Yom Kippurim, right? From Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, lo hayu avodim niftorim levotehem, then the freed slaves, they did not go home. Below mishtab din ladanim, but nor did they have to do any work for their bosses, for their owners. Okay, right. Ela oichlin shoysin smechim, right. But they eat and they drink and they are happy. They rejoice. Viatrosehen the roshehen, they have like crowns on their heads. What are these crowns? Well, whatever it is. I personally think, you know, that in olden days, you see pictures of, you know, Roman aristocrats and Greeks, and they used to put the, you know, the, like, vines, right, olive leaves or something like that, or laurel leaves, right. So it's a sign, you know, that they're nice and free, so these are the crowns that they had on their head, okay. Kevin Sheyigea Yom HaKippurim, and then when Yom Kippur comes, Toku based in the shofar, right, then the High Court blew the shofar. Niftaru avodim v'vatehem, and at that particular point, then slaves were free to go back to their homes. Misodos choses of alehem, and the fields would return once more to their original owners. So, guns fine. So, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, who says that he justifies the fact that the Mishnah says that the Rosh Hashanah, as far as the Jubilee is concerned, is actually the first day of Tishrei. Well, I don't have to tell you that you'll always find a contrary opinion. Two Jews, three opinions, right? So Rabbanon and the sages says, Shonim ato mekadesh, v'yato mekadesh chadoshim. They maintain that what is the meaning of the word, the pasuk when it says v'kidashtem eshnasa chamishim, that you shall proclaim as holy? You want to use a fancy word, sanctify, but I like proclaim as holy. It sounds much better. Okay, the 50th year. So what they're saying is that this year, this Jubilee year, this is what you proclaim as holy, right? let's see my eyes. Yeah, Shonamata Makadish, Reviyatum and Kadish Kadoshim. But you don't proclaim a month, a new month, as being holy. Now, I do have to say, the truth of the matter is, while it says that the Rabbanan said that, it's a drash. Why? Because we'll learn afterwards that when the Beis Din actually, when they had witnesses who came in and who saw that the new moon, you know, that they had seen the new moon, and they came and they testified before the Beis Din, and the Beis Din, after inquiring, asking all kinds of questions and so on, decided that their testimony was valid, then what would happen? Then the Beis Din would say that the month is Mekudosh, all right? It is sanctified. But still, the fact that the month is Mekudosh is not exactly in the same category as when the Torah says, V'kidashta mishnas chamishim shana, that you will sanctify it, so to speak, the 50th year, so that we can maintain both opinions as far as Mekudosh is concerned, or Kidashtim. Okay. Now, Tanya Yidach, we learned another interpretation. Torah says, Yovel He. This is the Jubilee. Now, the question is, why does it have to repeat after, you know, the Kidashtim Eshtas Chamishim So Ukrasim Neroboros Kolishveho? And that I left out before, and you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land of all the inhabitants of it, and we'll come to that eventually in Yotz Hashem. And then it says, Yovel He Shnasa Chamishim Shanot Yelachem. This is the Jubilee, and it's the 50th year, this is what it shall be unto you. So the question is, why do they have to repeat the idea of Yovel He? Ma Talmud Loma, what is the meaning of it? So he says, Latishanem Avikidashta Mishnasa Chamishim, right, inasmuch as it is written in the Torah that you shall sanctify the 50th year, Yochol. This is new already, this we didn't do last week. Then you might think as follows: Kishem Shemiskadeshes Veholeches Minchiloso, Kach Miskadeshes Veholeches Besofo. That this 50th year, just as it is become sanctified at the very beginning of the year, right? So likewise, it should become sanctified at the very end of it. Now, this is a little difficult concept for us to understand at the moment, okay? Because what we're saying is that maybe, just as at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, let's figure it this way. From the point of view of those where the Torah says what? On Yom Kippur, you shall blow the shofar, right? But you notice that according to Rabbi Yishmael, right, when actually does the year of Jubilee begin? It doesn't begin on Yom Kippur, but it begins when? Rosh Hashanah. All right, so at the beginning we already have a certain amount of period of time that has been added, so to speak, to the Jubilee year. Okay? Now how about at the very end? Maybe we should say that it also spills over into what? Into the following year. And Rashi suggests at this particular point that maybe we should say it spills over until the Yom Kippur of the 51st year.
Whoa.
You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. So we might think that, right? That Kishem Shemizkadesh is Olechis Bitkulasor, just as you have a period added at the very beginning of holiness, so likewise at the end of the Jubilee year. And it says, V'yal Tisma, and don't be surprised that I'm making the suggestion. Why? Sheharei, and here we have a very important principle that we're all familiar with. Behold, it says, Mosifin Mechol Al Kodesh. Our practice is to do what? It is that we add Vachadik, right, and we make it holy, so that when we have a holy day, we start it not at the moment when the sun sets, but when do we start it? We start it before that time, right? And likewise, does it end at sunset the following day? No. Because you have to allow an extra period of time, even though maybe technically it's no longer Shabbos or it's no longer Yontif, but nevertheless, for us, it's not sufficient. This is why we have to bench lift. When? Do we bench lift at sunset? Of course not. We have to bench it before. And from the moment that you bench lift, then automatically Shabbos has begun for you.
So they say,
is that where the 18 minutes? Yes, right. I have to tell you, in Yerushalayim, they usually have 45 minutes before. They're stricter over there in Yerushalayim. Well, they like to make
so
more
much,
Shabbos.
It's not so much to be sure you bench lift at the right time.
Correct. It's really... You're right. I mean, there are two things that are involved. One is the fact to make sure that you don't want to actually violate Shabbos, and that's why you do it prior. But this principle is really at work over here, that Mosifin Me'achol Ala Kodesh, right? That you add from the, you know, that which is not Shabbosic, from the profane to Shabbos, or to the sacred, okay? And of course, the same thing, you know, at the conclusion, this is why. You know, I have to allow Saturday night that I put down Sabbath ends at this and this time, and I have to allow a certain amount of time before I know that actually it's good and dark outside. The sun has definitely set before, and so on. So this all comes part of the calculations.
But then
yes.
The tradition of the Malava Malka is also to extend.
Okay, very good idea.
Okay,
it's a very good observation that, you know, we love Shabbos so much that we do not want to let go of it fast enough. Now, of course, at the time of Malava Malka, you can already do Vachadika things,
right.
Okay? But nevertheless, you still want the Shabbos to extend, and so therefore you have this farewell, so to speak, to the Sabbath Queen, you know, the Malava Malka. Of course, Malka there actually means King David, but it's okay.
Oh, really?
Because we say that this is it's a tradition that King David used to honor the Shabbos, not only on the Shabbos itself, but also by having a feast Saturday night. So that there's a phrase over there that says, Dohis Hudosa, the David Malka, right? This is the Suda of King David.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, but you know, Malka, you know, in Hebrew, Malka is a queen. But, you know, in Aramaic, Malka means the king. Okay. Now, alright, so, what is he proposing over here? He says, don't be surprised if I suggest that what? That we add at the beginning and we add at the end, because this is what we have as a general principle, right? Shehare Mosifin Mechol Al HaKodesh, that you add from that which is profane to the sacred, to the holy. So, he says, but Talmud Lomar, that's the reason why it says, Yovel Hi, Shnasa Chamishim. It is the Jubilee, it is the 50th year. What he's saying is, Shnasa Chamishim Atam Kadesh. Yes, you sanctify the 50th year. The Iatam Kadesh, but you do not sanctify Shnasa Chamishim Yachas. In other words, don't extend the Jubilee to Yom Kippur already of the following year. Genug, okay?
Oh, yes, so he disagrees.
Right, he disagrees. Yes, yes. Okay. All right. We're now on the next page. The Rabbanon. And as far as the rabbis are concerned, says the Shnas HaChamishim Atomoneh. The I Atomoneh Shnas HaChamishim Yachas. Okay? Somewhat similar idea. It says the 50th year you count, but you do not count the 51st year. Now, what is this counting? You know that we have such a thing called Sfiras HaOmer. What is Sfiras HaOmer? We count the Omer, right? You know that you say today is right, 1 day in the Omer, 2 days in the Omer, 3 days in the Omer, so on and so forth. Okay. When there was the Beis Din HaGadol in Eretz Yisrael, in other words, the Sanhedrin, right? So they likewise used to count, this is the first year of the Jubilee, it's the second year of the Jubilee, the third year of the Jubilee, and so on and so forth. So what he's saying is that you count 50, the 50th will be Yovel, the Jubilee, right? But the Iyat HaMonesh, Das HaMishim Yachas. but you did not count the 51st one. Now he says, La Fuke, this is in disagreement with the Rabbi Yehuda, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar, who said, Shnas Chamishim Ole Lekan Ulekan. Now, how Rashi interprets it is as follows. We have a Rashi on the top of the page, I hope, unless it's been cut off. I don't know. Hope it's there. So, Daf Tes Omed Aleph. The second page that I gave you, where we are right now. Maybe it's missing. All right. Let me just quote Rashi over here at this point. Problem is that when I use this big text and try to photograph it, I can't get the whole thing on the machine. Okay, so some of it gets lopped off. Yeah. So he says, V'rabbonon, he says, Lo yalfim im kidashtem shetiskadesh mitchilso. Rabbis who were not of the same opinion that the Jubilee year becomes sacred at the very beginning, right? Below is Torechi, the Miyute, so forth, and therefore not count Shnas HaYovel, Shnas HaChamishim, the Sof Yovel. But you do not count the Jubilee at the very end. And then as follows. We counted. The Bezdin counted, right? They counted 49, right? And then the 50th year, they said it's Jubilee, okay? Now, they don't go beyond that and say that the 51st year is the beginning of a brand new cycle. You understand what they were saying? In other words, the problem is, we count cycles of seven, right? Not only in Sefiras HaOmer, but we also, as far as the years to Shemitah, to the seventh year when the land of Eretz Israel is supposed to lie fallow, right? Not to be tilled. Okay. So, you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then what? Seventh year Shemitah. You count again 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, then again you have Shemitah, so. Okay. So, you wind up with 49. Okay? Now, the question is the 50th year. We say that the 50th year is Jubilee, it's not Shemitah, but nevertheless, are we to count it, let's say, as a zero year, and then begin the following year, in the 51st year, and begin again, count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. You understand? So he says no. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says it goes as the Kadu Lachan, in other words, 50th as far as the 49th is concerned, that this is Jubilee, but at the same time, in the opposite direction, it's already the first year of the beginning of a new cycle.
Oh,
okay, this is what he's saying. Yeah.
So what does that do? What does that do with the next 50? So it's still...
Okay, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, as I said, then... This is the 50th year is already like number one. Okay?
Right. So and are we getting short to the next 50?
So that the next 50, correct. I mean, you're going to wind up
with one short.
One short, exactly.
Going, yeah.
Right. This is according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that everybody agrees with his point of view, okay?
Well, they have to come to an agreement somewhere
yeah.
in order to count it.
Right.
In order to declare it, they
yes.
have to come to an agreement.
Right. I do have to say that the Rambam in general agrees that he agrees with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda as against the Rambam.
That you start counting one.
That you count one, right?
With the 50th,
right.
One.
Right. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because over centuries, that kind of.
Of course, it's going to make a difference. There's no question. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Pardon me. Well, I mean, the point is, instead of having, let's say, 50 years, then the next 50 years, you understand?
Right.
What we're saying is that since we're starting it on the 50th year, we start that year one, so the 50th year, the next 50th year is actually going to be the 99th year instead of rather being the 100th year. That's what we're saying. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Right.
Keeps doing that.
Yeah.
Doing it.
Right. Yeah. So, if that's the case, according to the Rabbanan, they disagree with him. that when he says, you know, that it counts Ola Lekan Lekan, so Kamash Molon below. Therefore, we learn, according to their interpretation, no. All right, now they get back again to Udemo Sifin, and as far as this business that we add Mechol Al Kodesh, right, from the profane to the holy, right, from the non-holy to the holy, Minolon. How do we know, is there a reference in the Torah to this? So he says, yes, there is, the Tanya. We have a tradition which teaches us, the Torah says, Bechorish v'akotzir tishbos, which means literally, in plowing and in reaping, you should rest. Now, naturally, I have to tell you, in its context, actually, they're talking about Shabbos. Okay? But what they are applying it now is not just to Shabbos, but they are applying it to Shemitah, to the seventh year. Okay? This is what they're applying it to.
To the land, actually.
Yeah, right. Because we're talking about plowing and harvesting and so on. Exactly. So that in the seventh year, in other words, it is to be a year where, you know, no work of that nature is done. Rabbi, yes.
Do you ever refer to it as the Sabbath of the land?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is,
yeah. Oh, yeah, the Torah says specifically, Shnas Shabbason, Yellow Arts. It's to be a year of Shabbos, right, for the land, right.
Okay.
And later on in the Teichacha, it says, you know, that the people do not keep the, you know, the Sabbath year and so on and so forth. So, you know, part of the misfortunes that will befall the people of Israel is that Golus will come, and then Oz Tirtze Oretz Eshapsiseha. Then the land will finally have an opportunity to observe its own Shabbos. Yeah, because, you know, the people who will be gone, right, they'll be in exile instead. So it's referred specifically both for good and for bad. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, well, that's the Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, correct. That this is the start of a new cycle. So that, in other words, we don't interrupt, you know, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years. And the year of Jubilee, if we count it as the first year, so automatically it's not a zilch year, a zero year. You know, like some people said, let's make a universal calendar where there are always going to be a certain number of days and months and so on. And with a leap year, you'll simply say that those days don't exist. I mean, I'm sure you've read about that in the past when they had all kinds of crazy ideas. Pardon me? I said, with the 50th year, it counts as also as the first year of the new 7 year cycle. Okay? Yeah. It's pretty much the accepted opinion, according to Tosfos. Yes. Yeah. It's pretty much the accepted opinion. There are authorities who feel that way. Right?
Well,
yeah.
They would have to come to an agreement, otherwise they would have confusion.
Of course, there would be confusion, absolutely. Of course, part of the problem that we have is we have not been in our land for centuries. I mean, we had, but, you know, in order for Jubilee to be observed, all the conditions have to be ripe. Number one, the Jewish people have to be the masters of the land. And as long as the Goyim are the masters, you cannot observe Jubilee, right? And what are we going to do? We don't have Jewish slaves, but that's what the problems are going to talk about, right? As we go along over here, okay? Yeah. Shemitah, yes. Shemitah is absolutely observed, right? And that's easier to keep track of because, you know, this every seventh year is Shemitah, okay? Yes. And Eretz Yisrael has become even more and more observed as the years go on because more and more people are observing it. At first, only a handful did. And because people were poor and so on, so they invented the idea of selling it to a goy, selling Eretz Yisrael to a goy, and then buying it back at the end of it, so that whatever was grown was not Jewish land, but it was goyish land, you see. Right. You know, it's like selling chametz before Pesach, right? It's a somewhat similar idea, right? Yeah. But today you have many, many agricultural settlements where they actually observe it religiously. They do not do any work during that year. They let the land stay fallow. And I explained some time ago, you know, that with food, if it's food that comes from outside Eretz Yisrael, it's not subject to the law of Shvius. So they make a great deal of use of the products that are imported from America, from other countries, and so on. I used to see in Eretz Yisrael, let's say, pineapple that came from Cambodia and the Philippines and stuff like that, you know, because you know, they were not subject, and you could observe Shemitah and still use these products. So that
those who observe Shemitah in Israel will not buy the Israeli grown food
during that year.
During that year.
That's correct.
That's correct.
That's absolutely right. Right. Yeah. When you take a look at canned goods, if it's packed under very careful supervision, you'll see that they'll tell you that it's free from various things: tevel, orla, shmita, shvius, whatever they'll call it. Right? Okay. So that, in other words, there's been no violation of the various agricultural laws that the Torah has to say concerning not only the seventh year, but also, for example, fruit of trees during the first 4 years of its growth and so on, okay?
But as far as this, just as far as the agro-economy, the rest
of
has there been any decision, or is it allowed to grow and export, but not the person, not the
whole? No, it would be a violation whether you sell to a Jew or to a non-Jew. But
then what they do is whatever grows, they just let it drop
off.
Yes, I mean, that's free, right, right. The land is fallow, right. And, you know, animals can go and eat. You are allowed to pick and eat.
Yeah.
You are allowed to pick for your own personal use. Anybody, according to the Torah, can come in also and eat over there, because during the year of Shvius, the land is hefker. It's free for all, okay? So you can take care of your own personal needs, you can take care of other people's needs, you can take care of your animals'
growing,
needs,
you can
right?
Use it? If it's growing by itself, you can use it? Like fruit of the trees?
The fruit of the tree, if it's for your own personal use, but you're not allowed to sell it.
What if you give the fruit to, let's say, to
Well, I'm not sure whether they would necessarily accept it.
Why?
I understand what you're saying. If you said that my field is hefker, otherwise anybody can come in and take whatever they want in order to eat for their own personal use, okay, plus Megan. Right? But if you're in a but if you're the full Moshe of Skenim, they are going to feel that they want to observe the laws of Shvius as much as anybody else, you see.
You just said before, it's forbidden to sell. We're not selling it, we're giving it away, donating it.
Okay. I'll let the Rabbanu know just we'll work that one out.
But then you don't get to mention it. So what?
Okay. All right. See. So yes. All right. So at any rate, as I said, Becharish Vakotir Tishbos, right? Which, as I said, originally in the Torah really is talking about Shabbos, right? But Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says Einu Tzarach Lomar Charish Vakotir Shel Shviyas. He says I don't even have to mention the fact that this equally applies to what? To the seventh year. Sha'arei Kvar Ne'amar, because the Torah has already said concerning the seventh year, Sotcha Lo Sizra, right? You are not to put any plant into your field, right? Etc. The rest of it is no should you harvest and so on, okay? So, Elo, Charish. So he says, what am I going to apply then, this pasuk, you know, Becharish Vakotir Tishbos, if I'm applying it to the seventh year? So he says, this is what I'm applying it says. He says, Charish Shel Erev Shviyis, the plowing that you do in the sixth year prior to the seventh year, HaNichlos L'Shviyis, right, the seventh year, in other words, Erev Shviyis HaNichlos L'Shviyis, as it's getting close to the beginning of the seventh year, or the Kotzer Shel Shviyis, Ayotze L'Motzei Shviyis, likewise, the harvesting of things that grew in the seventh year, and let's say you want to harvest them in the eighth year, this is also prohibited. Okay? The laws of Shmi'is are a little bit complicated, I have to tell you, because you also go on the basis of when do the roots take hold in the ground. Because if they take roots in the ground, if they that is, you know, the roots become rooted in the ground. Okay. If they do that, let's say a month prior to Rosh Hashanah, then that's perfectly okay. But if it's right next to Rosh Hashanah, let's say on the 28th of Elul or the 29th of Elul or something like that, then that would be considered already as being too close to Shvi'is, and that would be considered Shvi'is. You understand? So likewise, stuff that grew in Shvi'is, but they were not ready for harvesting yet until the 8th year, but this is still stuff that grew in Shvi'is, and even though it's now the 8th year, right, you can't use that either, you see. So that's what he's saying over here. They knew as far as various species. I mean, based on their agricultural experience. I mean, they were experienced farmers. They were experienced farmers. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Very few things that have a cycle that skip a harvest year.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is if you take little seedlings,
yeah,
like plant them,
yeah,
you know, but they really don't mature to a certain point. That's why it's complicated.
Right.
Somebody's going to say, when does it become mature?
Yeah,
right.
Not also,
yeah.
But that, you're not supposed to put the seedlings in there.
No, but
that
if you put it in the 60, at the end of the 60
yeah. Year. Yeah, the question is how close, right?
So
right.
When somebody
it,
makes
right.
a decision when that becomes
right.
a rooted plant.
Exactly. Yeah, right, that's true. Right. So that's why it's not an easy business.
Yeah,
I mean, there's plenty of complications as far as
Shmi'is
are concerned.
At the time when those things were
yeah.
observed that closely,
yeah.
it would appear to me that the people who were observing knew enough not to put seedlings in that close.
All right, but still people might be tempted, and so therefore it was up to the authorities to try to teach the people what was the right thing.
There are plants that there are certain species of fruit and other things that maybe only bear fruit every other year, or every third year, or every fourth year.
Yeah.
We have some of our, the buckster is every 7 years, right?
Maybe 70 years, I don't know. Right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It shows you that having been removed from the land all these centuries, we have a lot of learning to do when it comes time to try to find our roots once more in the land of Israel. This is part of the problems that people had to struggle with. And, you know, to this day, we still have to do a lot of learning about this business, okay? All right, let me just finish right now and we'll call it a night, okay? Okay, so Rabbi Akiva said right in right, talking about plowing that you do prior to the seventh year, how close would it be, you know, to whether it would be in violation or not, and likewise for Kotzes Shvi'is HaYosin Motzei Shvi'is, okay, likewise the harvesting that would be done in the eighth year at the conclusion of the seventh year, whether this would be considered still a plant of Shvi'is and therefore you couldn't use it, okay. Rabbi Shmuel Omer. Rabbi Shmuel says, Ma'acha Rish Rishus, Hafkotzi Rishus, right? He gave a different interpretation to the whole thing. He says, look, I have a different interpretation of the Pasuk. My interpretation of the Pasuk is as follows. It says Chorish, and Chorish means this is something that it's a voluntary action on your part. So Hafkotzi, so likewise, harvesting should also be Rishus. So you say, all right, so Gant's fine. So what are we talking about? So he says, I imply the verse as follows. He says, Yotso Kotsir HaOmer Shehu Mitzvah. Says, in general, harvesting is it's right. In other words, it's voluntary. You feel like harvesting, you harvest. You don't want to feel like harvesting, you don't. But as far as the omer, the grain that grew that they have to harvest, and then they make it into the mincha, you know, the offering that they're going to bring, the mincha sa omer, so that is a mitzvah. So that would be permitted. It would be permitted even in violation of the yontif, he says, in violation of Shabbos. But that's only his own opinion, I have to tell you. Okay? Not the mitzvah part, but the actual what? The harvesting part, right? The harvest. Is it a mitzvah or not? And therefore, are you permitted to violate in order to do it or not? Okay. Of course.
You can't violate a rule for a mitzvah.
Right, right. And so that therefore, there are certain mitzvahs that do override. For example, a baby boy is born on Shabbos, okay? If he's a healthy boy, when is his bris supposed to be? Shabbos, all right. So in connection with that, there are certain things that you are permitted to do in preparation for the bris, for the welfare of the baby and so on, right? But there are other things that you can't do. So a moel has to be up on these various rules and regulations. For example, could you say that the moel could ride on Shabbos in order to perform a bris?
Yeah.
When you say that the mitzvah overrides the fact that he's violated Shabbos.
You
can't? No. He cannot.
Well,
he even though
it,
he cannot ride on Shabbos in order to be able to perform a bris, right?
Well, what do they do during the Shemitah year? Okay.
Yeah.
They need fowl.
Right.
Right. They have to bring the homer.
Oh, okay. Well, in that particular case, no, that they would be permitted to harvest because there it's already a mitzvah to do it. But I'm talking about violating, let's say, yontif in order to do it, or violating Shabbos in order to do it.
No.
Okay. It so happens that by us, our calendar is such that the second day of Pesach is never on Shabbos. It's never. First day, yes, but never the second day. Second day is always a vachadikah day. So if they manipulated the calendar that way, you would never have that problem arise. But we're talking theoretically, okay? All right. Yeah. So, for Rabbi, let me just finish now. For Rabbi Yishmael, Masif Mecholach Chodesh, the fact that we do add, you know, from the non-holy to the holy, Menalein, how does he derive it? So he comes with a very interesting interpretation, and this will be the last thing we'll discuss tonight. He says, Nafkalei, he derives the following. In the Tanya, we have a statement that says, the Torah says concerning Yom Kippur, right? The Inisem is Nafsho Seichem, right? And you shall afflict your souls, right? Then the rest of the passage says, Petisha Lachodesh Ba'erev, on the ninth day of the month in the evening, Me'erev ad Erev, from even to Erev, from even to even, Tish B'Slu Shabbatchem. Okay. But the juxtaposition over here, the drash, is what? The Nisim is Nafshu Seichem B'Tisha. That's the next word. In other words, he didn't put the period after the word Nafshu Seichem, but instead he added the word, you know, B'Tisha, the next word to it. So he says, Yochel B'Tisha. What do you mean? You have to afflict yourself on the ninth day? Talmud Lomar, that's why the Torah says Bo'erev, in the evening. So you say, Yi Bo'erev, Yochum et Tevshach. So if you say that in the evening, it means that at the moment when it gets dark, Talmud Lomar, no. Betisha, that's why the Torah says on the ninth. Hoketzot, so how do you straighten out, you know, these two things? He says, Matzchil misanim ibeod yom, right? When do you begin to fast? You have to do it while it is still light outside, while it's still day. Milamed, and therefore this teaches us what? Shemosifin mechol al kodesh. That teaches us that we add from the non-holy right to the holy. Because even in the case of Yom Kippur, right, we still have to observe the fact that when do we begin the fasting? Before sunset, okay? So we are adding to it. All right, I'll stop at this point because it's already 9 o'clock, after 9 o'clock. And Yirtzeh Hashem, we shall continue next time. Hayom Yom, today is the 20th day of the month of October, I believe, right? And it's still 1999 yet. And so we are continuing now from where we left off last week. Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tes, Amud Aleph. Okay? All right. The issue over here, I just want to summarize for those who may have forgotten the thread of the arguments that are going on over here. So I'll summarize it just in a few words. The business began simply on the basis of the fact that we're learning that Rosh Hashanah, right, is the that is the first day of Tishrei, is the Rosh Hashanah as far as Yovel is concerned. This is what we said, okay? So, in other words, the year of Jubilee. So, that led already to a discussion about Jubilee, and we'll continue with it this evening, because they're not finished yet with the problem of Jubilee. Okay. Well, I just want to remind you again, what about Jubilee? Jubilee is not only a time, of course, that the land is supposed to be, enjoying a little cessation of work, but at the same time, it is a time for blowing of the shofar on Yom Kippur, Torah says so, right? It's a time for the freeing of all slaves, that is Hebrew slaves, those who were, whether they've served their 6 years or not, or whether they are even, the Eved Anirza. In other words, the slaves who had their ear pierced because they say they wanted to stay for the lifetime with their master, but they go free in any case in Yovel, okay? Right. And then the last thing that the Torah mentions is also that the land returns to the original owners, okay? So that sometimes referred to as Shmitas Karkos, okay? So these are the things that are specifically pointed out for Jubilee. Then, if you remember, an objection was raised about why does it say in the Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah, meaning the first day of Tishrei, as the Rosh Hashanah for Yovel, when the Torah specifically points out what? The 10th day, right? Yom Kippur, which is the 10th day of Tishrei. So, we had the opinion expressed that it's like a period between the first day of the month of Tishrei, which is actually the beginning of the Yovel year, right? But what happened to the slaves? They lived a good life. They didn't have to do any more work. They feasted, they ate, they drank, etc., etc. And then, with the blowing of the shofar on Yom Kippur, at that point, they were free to go home to their original homes. Okay? So, that took care of the controversy as to why the Torah specifically says the 10th when our Mishnah says the 1st of Tishrei. Okay, God's fine.
Somebody gives a gift to his wife. Does she come back?
Well, I don't know. Is she like Karka or not? I hate to tell you, but there is one Gemara that says that the woman is like Karka Olam. About Esther, it says. I mean, that Karka Olam means that she always is like soil. I mean, since we don't have women over here, let me explain. Okay. This is in reference, you see, to the fact. Okay, yeah. It's in reference to the fact. All right. That a woman, by virtue of her natural physique, you see, has the wherewithal that if it happens, I mean, so she has to submit. I mean, rather than face death, she has to submit to rape, okay? And therefore, they applied it naturally to Queen Esther, who, after all, according to the tradition, Gemara Megillah, she was married to Mordechai, right? But as a result of, how the Rabbeinu Shalom fixed up things so that the Jewish people should be saved, so she was forced to submit herself to Ahasuerus, okay? So that, therefore, it's in that connection that a woman is considered, Karka Olam, okay? But
then she went herself.
It means what?
means literally she is always like soil, like land, okay? In other words, just as land can always be plowed, right? So you'll figure out the analogy, okay? That's why I say this is not for polite society, okay? But nevertheless, it's since you raised the question, so
feminists would love to get a hold of that.
Right. I have no doubt. Right. It's another bullet against. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, but I'm saying it's in reference to the fact that, as far as rape is concerned, I mean, a woman is expected to submit to rape rather than to, to...
So,
to face death, right, it's one of these things, right.
Also, there's a cancellation of deaths.
Yeah, but
cancellation of deaths.
Deaths were already cancelled in the seventh year before.
Okay, so the jubilee
right.
is
yeah.
The
right. But now that raised another issue that we had last week, and that was a machlokus, is a difference of opinion as to whether the jubilee year, does it count as the 50th year, or does it count as, let's say, the beginning of a new cycle of 7 years? In other words, should we say that with, the fact that we count one, year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, year six, and then comes year of Shemitah, right? Okay, so we have already counted the 49th year, right? Which is, of course, a year of Shemitah. The question is, what about the year of Jubilee? Is it simply like a blank number in the calendar? Or would we say that Yovel actually counts already as the beginning? If we say that it is, a blank day, then we would say that when do we start the cycle again? It would be the 51st year, right? But this is not the opinion expressed by Rabbi Yehuda, and his opinion is accepted as halacha by the various poskim, such as the Rambam, who deals with this, namely, that the 50th year counts already as the beginning of the first year of a seven-year cycle. So there's no interruption as far as, counting for the Shemitah. Okay.
You still have the seventh year and the Yovel, which is the first year. You still
right.
have 2 years in Yovel, you can't count.
Yeah, that's correct.
In that respect, it's...
That's right, right. The Torah says so specifically, right.
What you're saying, and therefore, we're actually at seven days into the new year, by
right.
the time it's all
I'm sorry, again?
What date is it when they close Shomron?
It would be on Yom Kippur of the 50th year.
Yeah, but what date of the month?
The 10th of Tishrei.
So already you're 10 days into the new year.
Yeah, so that's why... Yeah, correct, but this is why, they tried to straighten out the contradiction between what the Torah says and the fact that the Mishnah says that the first of Tishrei is the beginning of the Yovel. Okay? All right. Now, that, of course, led... So the conclusion of Rabbi Yehuda was that it's Eidah Lekan and Lekan. In other words, it counts as the year of Jubilee, as the 50th year, but at the same time, it also counts as the first year in the seven-year cycle. So he said, guns good. Okay. Then they go back again to a discussion about the seventh year. It's written, this is what we have over here, on Tes Omed Aleph. If you remember, when they take the Pasuk, Bechorish Vakotzir Tishbos, right? Which means literally, you shall rest or observe, a Sabbath from plowing and reaping, right? And which, in general, in its connection, in its place, in the Torah, it was really a reference to Shabbos, that on Shabbos you don't do plowing and so on. But here, it's taken and extended to the idea of the year of Shemitah, right? And therefore, in the year of Shemitah, they say that Becharish of Akotzir, they say this applies to, for example, plowing in the sixth year, at the end of the sixth year, right? And reaping at the end of the seventh year, which would be the beginning of the eighth year. You understand? In the cycle. So that leads to the problem that we are now discussing over here, namely the principle of Mosifin Minachol Alakodesh, that we add from that which is profane, not holy, to that which is holy. Of course, we are familiar with it, with the whole idea, because we already, you know, have become accustomed after all these centuries to the idea that you have to begin Shabbos earlier, you have to end Shabbos later, and the same applies to all the various Yom Tovim. We understand that. But this was deduced by Rabbi Akiva, the business about the plowing, Becharish of Akotzia, right? Not to plow close to the beginning of the seventh year, and not to reap until, you know, the eighth year, and in that case too, whatever it is that you're reaping, it may possibly be something that grew in the seventh year, and then it would be prohibited. This is a very complicated business, agriculturally. Yeah.
They're halfway. I understand that before the Shemitah starts,
right,
any seedlings which have sprouted, are acceptable.
Okay. There's a difference among the various authorities as to whether that's so, or whether you have to give a certain amount of time prior, and so on and so forth. Okay? There are those who say that as long as there are 30 days prior to Rosh Hashanah, then that's okay. Others say that it should go back even further. And the same thing, you know, afterwards and so on. Okay. They do observe the fact, I mean, about 30 days prior to Rosh Hashanah. That they do observe, okay? Even though you could find coolers for it and say that actually the Shavuot, you know, the seventh year doesn't begin until Rosh Hashanah of that seventh year, and therefore whatever was done beforehand would be permissible, but that's not the accepted opinion. The accepted opinion is that you have to allow at least 30 days for the plant to be firmly rooted in so that it counts as still being to the sixth year and not being so close to the seventh year that actually you consider it a seventh year plant. Okay? So there's a problem because in Eretz Israel where they observe Shemitah, I'm talking about observant people in Eretz Israel. Okay? So in that particular case, you have to know exactly what the products are, and this is, as I explained the other week too, this is why there's also a great deal of reliance upon fruits, vegetables and stuff that come in from other countries and that they import.
Those fish are grown not in the earth but in stones.
Alright. Hydroponics has become a new field in Eretz Israel, and this is one of the reasons why. Right, because if you're doing it, you know, and it's not actually in the soil itself, then in that particular case, it's permissible, you see, to use.
Isn't that the other countries copied from Israel?
Right, right. Well, this Eretz Israel, I mean, they pioneered many things, I don't have to tell you. Alright, now, the point that Rabbi Akiva is making then is that this is proof, therefore, for the principle of what? Of Mosifin Minachol Ala Kodesh, right? Now, as we see over here, the last thing that we had over here is that Rabbi Yishmael has a different opinion. Namely, how does he derive the fact that the Torah already adopts this principle of Mosifin Minachol Ala Kodesh? He derives it from the pasuk that we read about Yom Kippur. Okay? Namely, it's written over there, right, Besisho Bo'erev, right, Besisho Bachodesh Bo'erev, right? Right, on the ninth day, right, of the month, in the evening, Be'erev Ad Erev, from evening to evening, Tish Besu Shabbatchem. So let's take a look again at what we have over there in the middle. It says, as we said before, you know, Talmud Levin Betisha HaKetzad, how about, how do you understand, you know, resolve the difficulty that it says on the ninth day? So it says, Maschilu Mitzanim Ebeid Yom, right? So you have to begin your fasting while it is still daytime. This is the last thing that we had. So Melame, therefore, according to Rabbi Yishmael, this is the proof that we have in the Torah itself, what? Shemotzifin Mechol Al Kodesh, that you add from that which is not Kodesh, not holy, to the holy. So he says, Ainli Elabich Nisoso. This principle applies not only as to when it begins, right? And how do I know that the same principle of adding Mechol al HaKodesh also applies at the conclusion of the day? Talmud Lomar, this is the reason why the Torah says Me Erev Ad Erev, from evening to evening. Okay, so in other words, the Yom Kippur does not end at sunset, but instead it has to end at the evening, what already is the evening of the day after Yom Kippur. Okay? We understand that. I mean, this is why, for example, we delay, you know, until we're sure that at least 40 minutes have passed or something like that, so that we will not be infringing upon the holiness of the day, but instead, you know, we are mosif, we add from the following day already to the holy day. And then he says, Einli Eliyom HaKippurim. Torah mentions only Yom Kippur, but Shabbos has Minayin. How do we know this applies also to Shabbos? Talmud Lema, that's why the Torah says, Tish Bisu. Tish Bisu, we see already, what do we see in that word? We see the word Shabbos in there. So therefore we know that the same principle of Mosifim and Achol al HaKodesh applies to Shabbos. Yomim Tovim Minayin, how do we know the same thing applies to Yom Tovim? So he says, Talmud Lomar, it's written over there, Shabbatchem. In other words, the word Shabbatchem, Ho Ketzad, how do we interpret that word? He says, Kol Mokom, wherever, Sheyesh Bo Shvus. In other words, where you're not allowed to do any work. Instead, you have to rest from work, which would apply any of the days that are listed as what? As being Mikra Kodesh, right? As being days of holy convocation, if you want to use a fancy translation, right? So Mosifin Mechol Al Kodesh. So on any Shabbos or Yontif, then we add from the non-holy to the holy. All right, so we straighten that out. But now they come back to Rabbi Akiva, because what did Rabbi Akiva say is the proof for Mosif Mechol Al Kodesh? He took it from Bechorish Vakotzir Tishbos, right? Where he applied it not only to Shabbos, but he applied it, as we saw, to the sabbatical year, right? To the year of Shemitah, where you're not allowed, where you have a period before where already the influence of the Shemitah is there, and the time after where it is. Okay. So, my Ovid Lev, what does he do with this Pasuk then? You know, Basisha, Chodesh Ba'arabi, or Ba'der, and so on. I mean, how does he interpret it? So he says, Miboyle, he needs it. He needs it in accordance, in or in agreement, if you wish, with the opinion which was stated specifically by Chiya Bar Rav, who came from Difti. The Tani, as we have learned, Chiya Bar Rav Midifti understands the following. He says, "V'nisem es nafsho seichem b'sisha." It's written that you are to afflict. Again, the pasuk runs, "V'nisim es nafsho seichem." You are to afflict yourself naturally. It's a reference to Yom Kippur, b'sisha b'chodesh la'erev. Right this way. But he juxtaposes, you know, the fact that b'tisha comes right after v'nisim es nafsho seichem. You are to afflict your souls when on the ninth day. This is the drash that he has. So we say, tell me, is it on the ninth day of the month of Tishrei that we fast? Don't we fast instead on the tenth day? Yom Kippur is the tenth of the month. So therefore, why does the Torah word it as follows? It says, to tell you, whoever eats and drinks on the ninth day of Tishrei, Mala Lov HaKosov, it's as if he has fulfilled the Pasuk, which says, Te'ilo Hisana Teshiva Asiri. As if he had fasted not one day, but as if he had fasted both days, both the ninth day of Tishrei and the tenth day of Tishrei. This is what we have over here, the new sheet. Take a moment. Okay. All right. Now let's continue. All right. So we are right now on the top line of the Taf Tes Omid Aleph, Omid Beis, okay. All right. Tana Rabbana. Yeah, I started the machine again. Right. Tana Rabbana. Our sages taught us as follows. Getting back to the Yovel, it says Yovel he. Now, the best thing, of course, would be if we would take a look at the Chumash and see how the words go. All right. First of all, you know, it tells you, you know, that, you know, you have to count seven full cycles of 7 years, right? Shevchanim, Shevchanim, etc., Shevchanim, and so on and so forth. Okay, guns good. And then the Kiddush Mishnas HaChamishim Shanot says, right, that you are to sanctify the 50th year. And then it says, Ukrosim Dror Ba'oros HaFol Yishmeho, proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. This, is, of course, refers to the freeless days, right? Right? And yeah. Then it says, Yovel he, it is the Jubilee, Shnas HaChamishim Shanot Yelochem, the 50th year is to be unto you. Now, here is the thing. We might argue that the words in the Torah are simply that they're reinforcing the idea that it's Yovel. It's the Jubilee year, okay? It wants to stress the fact that the 50th year is holy and it is Jubilee, okay? Yovel. But the question is, why, since they've already said, you know, they've already given you the background to it and they've stressed that the 50th year is the year of Jubilee, why do they now, after Cross of Jobos Holy Shahi, Yovel he, why do they have to repeat again the fact that this is Jubilee? Okay? So therefore, I now come up with a new interpretation of these two words. Yovel he. The Yovel he, they say, Afalpi Shale Shomtu, which would mean, even though, let's say, they did not actually give the land back to the original owners of it. Okay? Afalpi Shalo Toku, even though they have not blown the shofar. Okay? So, in other words, according to this interpretation, that even if they didn't do these two things, right, then in that particular case, it still is automatically Jubilee, Yovelti. This is what the Brisa here is saying, okay? But then he says, Yochel, let us suppose, Afal Pishlo Sholchu, let us suppose that even if they did not set the slaves free,